poppin', everybody. Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, Ben, the one true glasses wearer of popcorn culture.
I'm so fine with that.
Oh, are you so fine with that?
Oh, yeah, of course. 100%.
You're fine with just totally being a phony over there?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I mean,
they're blue blocker glasses, yeah. Jay, which means that they're not doing nothing, even if they're not prescription grade.
Right. Prescription grade.
Prescription strength.
Not prescription. End of sentence.
that's true. Yeah. Just prescription glasses.
They're just not prescription glasses.
No, they're just regular glasses.
I think there's like a whole bit in like an episode of Seinfeld where Elaine is dating a man who shaves his head intentionally to be bald, and George is all offended on behalf of bald people.
I can see it. I can see it. It's like, I guess if you have baldness anyway,
right?
It's like, I don't know. Actually, now I'm trying to decide if I think that that's a worthy argument.
Well, in George's opinion of himself, which is very low, this is a big problem for him in the dating world, is that he's bald.
And, oh, I see. Right. So the fact that somebody would optionally choose to do it almost like takes like something out of like his arsenal of, if not for this,
right,
then I'd be...
Right. Although it turns out that said boyfriend of Elaine's has gone naturally bald in the process of shaving his head.
Oh.
So she asks him to grow his hair back out and he can't.
He can't.
And even though he looks the exact same, his confidence goes to like zero.
Oh no. Oh, that's so sad.
It's a classic Seinfeld situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nothing actually changed, dude.
Right, right. This was so fitting for the show that's about nothing.
Right. Oh, yeah.
How perfect. Jay, how about a corny joke just to kick us off?
If you think you can get through one before minute 58.
I know.
We'll see.
Fact, last week's episode, I was quite proud of the fact that we led right out of the gate. It was like, hey, corny joke. We talked about it. We've got it right here.
We got it.
And then I think it was literally like the closing comments of last week's episode.
Yeah,
spoilers.
We got back to it eventually.
We got back to it.
All right. Well, fire away, Ben. Let's do the show proper and start with a corny joke.
Jay, what time do ducks wake up?
Oh, it's about ducks.
I know. How perfect, right?
So I feel like quack is somewhere in the answer. What time do maybe pad waddle? I don't know what time.
Pad waddle?
I was like thinking paddling. I got halfway through paddle and switched to waddle.
Oh, I got you. Pad waddle.
You know the time of pad waddle.
Yes, indeed. Okay, it's at the quack of dawn.
The quack of dawn. See, I knew quack was in there.
You were so close. You were so close.
Yeah, I was quacking around it.
Right. Yeah, you were quacking around it. You were pod waddling around it.
That's right. I was pod waddling around it. Can I say that on the topic of ducks?
Yeah.
That this past week we have started to see a few GMA stickers starting to appear in the wild. They have finally arrived in people's mailboxes. And they have started just sticking them on the world.
Yes, they have like infiltrated the exterior.
That's right.
Yes, indeed.
Out there.
A little bit of background for you is that we have Green Mallard Association, aka the GMA.
Yes.
Stickers.
Right.
This is a throwback to, it's a gag that we did in high school where we basically printed off these exact things and we stuck ducks on the walls and such and just really generally all over our high school, and people just didn't know where they came from.
They noticed them for sure.
Yeah.
Because we put them everywhere. I would slip them in people's lockers. I would put them on people's backpacks.
Right, right.
People, and they would discover them and they'd be like, what does this mean? I don't know. What is the Green Mallard Association? Exactly. That's exactly the point.
Exactly.
No one ever knew.
It's not even searchable. You wouldn't even find like a Wikipedia article about it.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Trying to encourage the little kernels to do a thing.
How truly spectacular would it be if the GMA had a Wikipedia page before we did?
Oh, that would be pretty spectacular. Because then by virtue of having the Wikipedia page for the Green Mallard Association, certainly would have to list the members, of which we would be... You know, notable.
We would be
notable members.
Notable members of the GMA, which would then like our credentials inside of that could be notable Cave Spring High School alumni.
Exactly.
Ugh, it's all coming together.
It's all coming together.
Okay. So
together,
people were able to purchase their own Green Mallard Association stickers.
Yeah,
they're small, mm-hmm. but they're meant to be like sort of just placed. Places.
Yeah.
Where have you seen them so far?
Well, one of my, I saw some that were just on like a trailhead, it was like a nature walking trail, but maybe my favorite one thus far has got to be that someone put a GMA sticker on a KFC. Kentucky Fried Chicken, AKA Big Chicken.
AKA
other users of the hashtag popcorn culture.
Right.
You know how we feel. Beef with Big Chicken. Someone has infiltrated KFC and put, they stuck a GMA sticker right on their sign.
Okay. So
or
people,
the pole of their sign, I should say. The pole of their sign.
We'll be sure to have a picture or a link to it.
You can be sure that KFC is feeling the sting all the way at the top.
They're like, guys, they're coming.
They're like, wait a minute.
They're taking over.
No.
Yes. Yes. No, what I think this is funny because people who may be entering the pop for the first time just drank from the proverbial fire hose of popcorn culture inside jokes.
Well, yes.
So, okay, I want to ask about that because this is something where if you are introduced to something that's already going full speed, sort of like so that there are those types of jokes and you're playing like a little bit of catch up,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Do you feel... Is that something that encourages you because you're like, oh, there's jokes to be had inside of this place?
Okay.
Or is it the type of thing where you're like, oh, man, I can't keep up because there's so many things going on?
I think often with situations like this, it is clear to me when like a reference is being made that like, I know I'm not aware of that joke, but the point often is not that like I don't feel excluded.
Yeah.
Normally it's like, okay, if I keep up with the show, I will eventually come to understand
what that joke is.
What the joke is. Like sure. it'll come back. If it's part of like the vernacular of the show, it's gonna keep coming up and I'll get it eventually. And maybe at some point I'll go back and catch up.
Sure,
but
sure.
Okay. I hope it doesn't feel like exclusive or like you're like, wait, I don't get it.
I don't understand what the GMA is or stickers or why ducks. Or why they're putting them places.
That's right.
So the real reason I ask is because it was my magnificent effort at a segue into discussing WandaVision.
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 Man,
okay.
I feel like all I do is discuss WandaVision.
It does feel like that is the case. And I would want to offer just a potential disclaimer that if you have not been watching WandaVision, that there could be a couple of spoilers
up through episode 7 as we record this.
Yes, yeah. So and it's not really that I want to go like super nitty gritty deep into WandaVision so much as talk about WandaVision as the phenomenon that it is.
I agree. I don't think we necessarily, well, I don't know what you want to talk about, but I think we don't have to discuss what the episodes are about so much as like the effect the show is having.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I would say coming into WandaVision, the MCU sort of like, and it's so funny where it landed, but the MCU sort of came to its close with Avengers Endgame in 2019, which was then promptly followed by a year of effectively Far From Home. Yeah. You're right. Yes. Yes. But I mean, as far as big picture stuff is concerned,
yeah,
that's where like, you know, Endgame sort of was, I feel like, neatly capped off there. No pun intended. Cap. You get it?
I get it.
We'll come back to that later. But with that, I think we fell into sort of like this quarantined year where a lot of like progress and new movies and everything sort of came to like a screeching halt. And I was very curious how the MCU might be marching forward as like this great, big, gigantic, hyper successful entity.
Yeah.
That like so many people bought into like very aggressively. Like, I mean, obviously Endgame is the most popular movie of all time at the box office.
Right.
And it's like, it seems like the idea of being into like comic books and this type of thing is like no longer this Big Bang Theory, classic tropey, nerdy activity that you might do. It's like just complete commonplace.
Just anyone. Yeah. It's very mainstream.
Very mainstream.
Yeah.
So building up to that though, I feel like you have 23 movies from the MCU that
right.
come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of origin stories for all of these characters. You're sort of starting to get to know them, you know, maybe for the first time if you haven't been a comic book fan prior. So, you know, you're taking in everything sort of movie by movie. And with that, you start to get a little bit of that burnout mentality of like, okay, it's another origin story. Like, how did this hero come to get their powers and who's their first villain? And like, what does that mean? And
right.
You have like a sequel edition where they know their powers a little bit more. And, you know, like where do they go with that?
Yeah. I mean, early days MCU, very repetitive in terms of Lots of origin stories, lots of mirror matchups between the heroes and the bad guy. Like, this guy has my exact set of powers. Who will win?
Right, right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like Iron Man kicking it off, you know, in the end, the final battle is, you know, Iron Man, Tony Stark versus
Ironmonger.
Ironmonger.
Yeah.
You know, Obadiah Stane.
Obadiah Stane.
I got there. Yeah. I got there.
The Tony Stark built this in a cave. That was pretty good.
Thanks. Yeah. I practice it a lot.
You do say that a lot.
It's like one of my favorite lines from all of Marvel. It's I think that when these movies first started coming out, and as you started to realize that there's like the greater narrative, the Avengers narrative, the Infinity Saga.
Yeah.
You know, and like all, when you're starting to realize like, oh, all of the movies are part of like a bigger story, and like in Guardians, that was, you know, the Power Stone. And, you know, in Thor Dark World, that's the Reality Stone. And you're starting to see that, like, despite each movie being able to completely stand on its own, you also, and all of us collectively, are starting to lean in and be like, okay, but what are the bigger implications? What are the bigger implications? And it felt like that idea was merging just seamlessly and perfectly with, like, the big narrative kind of coming together. So right at the same time that it seemed like people started to ask those questions, like, what does it mean for the big story? We were also nearing the conclusion of the whole big story.
Right.
You know, so it's a 10-year span of time, and probably not realistically until the last 3.5-4 years did I feel like that really started to be like the conversation.
Well, it felt to me like a lot of that came between Infinity War and Endgame.
It did. It's, I mean, I would say that it spiked, you know?
It
ramped up exponentially after that.
For sure. Like once Infinity War happened and, you know, Thanos does the snap, then all of a sudden, I feel like, you know, there was a year between that moment and Endgame where you got to see how it was all going to resolve itself. And all of a sudden you had 21 other movies to like draw possible answers from.
Exactly. Let's go through. Let's find every little detail. Things that seemed so innocuous before now feel like they could be like a super big hint as like the big story. Like how long have they been setting it up?
And,
you know, all these like little details that everybody would like to comb through. But with that being said, I think you have a couple of things that happen. So Endgame happens and it's very, very satisfying because like we've been waiting for so long, but at the same rate, maybe didn't know that we were waiting the whole time.
Sure,
that,
you didn't know necessarily like what Endgame was going to be. You'd seen some Avengers movies, but like...
Right, yeah. Like we now have the precedent for what it means to have an Endgame level MCU event, which means that as we kick off, you know, phase four, and it sort of seems like phases 1 through 3, which would have been what we've seen basically through the Infinity, you know, saga.
Yeah.
Is now we're all leaned in. Now it's almost like, no matter what, any movie that comes out, we're going to try to extrapolate it to the big picture.
Right.
And it does pose a very interesting problem if you're Marvel, because you're like, how do you recapture that lightning in a bottle? Like, how do you make everything interesting enough that we could wait another 10 years to have that next Endgame level event?
Right. It is an interesting situation where, yeah, like when Iron Man came out or when Thor came out or whatever, you weren't like, now how is that, what does that mean for them defeating Thanos?
Right.
Like you're not wondering, you know, that wasn't even a consideration. Whereas as the next few movies come out, it feels like right away you're going to be wondering, how does this affect the end?
Right.
At all. And like, what can, because you, there's the sense too that like when the first round of like phase one movies were coming out, maybe they didn't even know where it was going, but people are going to assume now that it was the most successful thing ever, that everything is intentional and is pointing at a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that what you have as well is like the Fast and the Furious paradox, the laws of the escalation of threats. Do you follow? So like,
I know what you mean. Like the first Fast and the Furious movie, they're like stealing DVD players. And then like probably the 12th one, whenever that comes out, they'll be like on the moon or something.
Yes. Fighting like intergalactic. I mean, they may like the Fast and the Furious franchise might just literally be part of the MCU.
Who knows? And at eventually, this point.
Yeah. Dominic Toretto is just one of the Avengers.
God, please no.
Can he wield Mjolnir?
Absolutely not.
Definitely not. But no, I mean, you saw the exact thing happen with the Fast and the Furious movies, where each time it came out, you were seeing like, okay, like now it, you know, it starts with DVD players, and then it was kind of like, oh, now it's like $10 million. And then after that, it was like, oh, this like city's in danger. And then after that, it's like, oh, like, I don't know, you know, like everything just got like, it ramped up and ramped up and ramped up until the point where it just got like completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like what you have, you know, with these Marvel movies, with superheroes, is like, how well can you tell a story that is still compelling without also feeling like things are getting slightly ridiculous? And, you know, are we like going to be bored of origin stories, or can you continue to just tell them in new and different ways and, you know, get us wrapped up every time? Like Black Panther is one of my favorite Marvel movies, and it's one of the more recent ones to come out.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, it's just the Black Panther origin story movie.
In a lot of ways it is. The thing about Black Panther is that even though that one's sort of his origin story movie, he starts out like as Black Panther already, you know, and he's been in a couple of movies already.
That's true.
And I know that was such a good one as well, because it was, I think, already suffering from like the, how do we introduce this brand new character and introduce a threat that feels world ending, even though all these other things have already happened? Like, why weren't they around?
Right.
And it was like, they had a very elegant answer that this hyper advanced city is purposely secretive from the rest of the world.
Right. Like, they don't want to share their secrets.
They don't want to share their secrets, but their secrets are, we have world ending technology. Basically.
Right. Yep.
And like the villain is like, guess what? I'm going to share that and I'm going to take over the world. It's going to be that easy.
Right.
Just, yeah. So I thought they did that. They found a pretty good way to do that.
But on the flip side of that, you've got what I would argue is Ant-Man and the Wasp, where the stakes are like, they're almost too small.
Like, I see what you did.
Yeah. There you go. Right. They're small enough to be ant-sized.
Exactly.
Right. And I feel like as a result, that movie introduces, you know, the quantum realm in a more significant way and how it affects Endgame. And that's really the primary function that I think Ant-Man and the Wasp had towards the whole MCU. Well, because
And I think that's sort of the way you can go about it. Like, not everything, like, there is that problem of like power escalation and like threat escalation.
The Fast and Furious paradox, please. Use the correct terminology.
Okay. If you want to call it that.
That's exactly what I want to call
okay,
it.
Okay.
I think it is the perfect descriptor.
Okay. I think Fast and Furious just suffers from also like power escalation or whatever. But whatever, the Fast and Furious paradox, if you want to call it that.
That's exactly what I want to call it. Yeah, thank you.
I think you can have other like small stakes stories that don't have to be world ending, like Ant-Man and the Wasp, where it doesn't have to be, the end of it isn't like, oh my gosh. But see, the thing about Ant-Man and the Wasp is that movie is very small scale. I mean, literally, and just like the threat, the villain is like, I forget what they're even doing. They're like trying to steal a cure for like a disease or something because they're afraid Hank Pym won't work with them. And it's like, maybe if you just asked, he would have helped you cure your daughter or what, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, effectively.
Yeah. So it's very small stakes. Like, we just need to heal this one person because they're sick. But the flip side of it is that even though the threat in that movie isn't world ending, the technology it introduces is incredibly important to the greater Marvel story at large. So you can have like small stakes villain, big stakes like, okay, maybe you didn't use it in the most effective way, but now it exists, so we can also just use that idea and crank it to 10 over in this movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So all that being said, because I want to bring it back to WandaVision, because it feels like such a like a phenomenon that we're living through. And quite honestly, like with the shows that Disney Plus are putting out, like when The Mandalorian came out, I'm like, that's going to be the flagship show,
you know,
like that's the one. Like, if you're HBO, you have Game of Thrones, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think that I was like, Disney Plus is going to have The Mandalorian, and that's going to be the show that brings people in. And then WandaVision happens and you're like, wow, this is so much fun. And it's so weird. And it's like, and everyone loves it. It's amazing. But okay, so here's my question. So because I was originally asking you about like inside jokes and sort of like, okay, if you're introduced to like a show or you know, whatever the case may be, a community of people.
Yeah.
And it's the case that you know that there's a lot of these things and you don't necessarily know all of the references. Does that like encumber your ability to enjoy it? Or is it the type of thing where you're like, okay, I want to learn everything. I want to be a part of it. I want to be on the know. Because I feel like with WandaVision, there is a very delicate tightrope that's being walked right now.
Yeah.
Where, and it's hard to know exactly like where Marvel the studio, Marvel, the writers, are like where their position is. Because you have channels like ours, the Super Carlin Brothers channel, that, you know, watches each episode and we're looking for every minute detail and we're going back to, you know, the history books and looking through and like being like, okay, could this be a reference to that or this or this yeah. character? Or, you know, were they alluding to that or was it just coincidence? Or, you know, is it a red herring? Like, you know, what, where are they sending us with all these stories?
Right.
And I think that this season or this show in particular has really brought to the surface this question of like, is it fun to do the homework? Is it fun to be like diving into each episode? Are most people who are consuming it like going through and watching some kind of like a recap episode to like better understand what they just saw?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And it's very difficult for like me personally to know how to answer because of like what we do.
Right.
And like the little echo chamber that we live in on the internet is filled with people who, of course, are very leaned into their fandoms. Like, you know, the tagline on our channel is celebrate your fandom.
Right.
So like everyone who watches us, they like us, or like what they like, I think, about our content is that we deep dive the information and we're trying to figure everything out. So like we are surrounded by people who are, I think, like that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But I can't imagine that's the full viewing audience of WandaVision. And it would be curious to me, like, I don't know if this is what you're trying to ask, but like, could someone who has watched zero MCU movies turn like, who's like, could this be your first introduction to the MCU? And if so, would you enjoy it in a satisfying way? Like, would you be able to keep up at all? Or is it like so deep into the MCU at this point that if you're brand new, you keep hearing your friends talk about the show WandaVision, you're like, well, I don't even have Disney Plus. Let me get it and check it out. Like, if you just turned it on and had no idea, would you get it? Would you be like,
would it still be fun?
Would it still be fun?
I think the question is so absurdly multi-layered, especially with WandaVision in particular, because on top of all of the deeper Marvel lore that is existing in every single episode, mm-hmm. you also have the real world history that of the actual sitcoms that every single episode is a parody of.
Right.
And so like, it could be the case that if you grew up watching, you know, like the 1950s, 60s, I Love Lucy, you know,
Bewitched, Dick Van Dyke.
Yes, exactly. Like you might watch those episodes and be like, what a fun thing,
right?
You know, like to see like a modern day take on it. Like I used to love that show growing up.
Right.
Whereas me, I might've been like, I've never seen that show. And yet I still love this episode. It is still super entertaining because I get some of like, I get the idea behind some of the like almost purposefully bad visual effects of like, you know, the plate almost looking like it's being suspended in the air with like
a string. Right.
You know, exactly. Yeah. And sort of like how does that play? You know, so what I'm trying to say, though, is that do you understand the reference to the real world television show that they're doing? And then inside of the content of the show itself, do you understand the bigger picture Marvel questions that might be introduced? Do you know who that villain is that was just alluded to? Like, right. And then like when the big reveals come, are those reveals layered enough that you could, even without knowing the lore, it might still be surprising?
Yeah.
And there's a specific question I want to ask.
Okay.
Like I said, so possible spoilers. So if you haven't seen up through episode 7, then sign off or mute it or jump ahead 5 minutes or something. But okay. So in the latest episode of WandaVision, it is revealed that Agnes, the next door neighbor, is Agatha Harkness.
Right.
And so in our office, this was something that like we've been pretty well sure of for.
Right. This was not like a big surprise.
But like the way that it was almost delivered on screen was a little bit of like this like mic drop moment, like boom. And in my mind, I have so many different reactions to it, because if not for what we do for a living, I would not be the type of person who would deep dive into this type of stuff. And when I heard Agatha Harkness, I would have been like, I have literally no idea.
That means nothing to me.
It means nothing to me.
She's not like a a big name villain within the Marvel universe to the point where even, you know, it's not like Lex Luthor just showed up. We're like, even if you've never read a Superman comic, you know who Lex Luthor is.
Sure.
You know, it's not, yeah, it's not like that level.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah, yeah.
You know, like Agatha Harkness, I'm betting most people learned about her last week.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I'm sure the Marvel wiki for Agatha Harkness blew up in the past.
Right.
7 days.
Yeah.
With that, the other twist that happens inside of that moment is some people may not have been aware at all that Agnes the neighbor is maybe potentially the villain, or more than just that like quirky neighbor that all sitcoms feature.
Right.
Because going back, you know, through every sitcom ever, you always have that sort of like potential comic relief character who's not a part of like the main family, but who's like always over at the house and always randomly shows up. And like, you know, I think as a tool for a sitcom, they're extremely effective because they can always like introduce external things to the main story.
Yeah.
So they're a useful tool for that. So again, you know, you could go back to that episode. You can be like, okay, have you ever watched the TV show Modern Family before? And then if you have, how much is your appreciation of the show Modern Family and their parody of Modern Family affecting how you're taking it in? Are you aware of who Agatha Harkness was and how did you respond to that? Or were you aware or even remotely privy to the idea that the neighbor could have been the villain? Like, you know, there's so many different layers. And depending on what kind of, and maybe this is what they're doing, is like, there's a little bit of something for everybody.
Right.
You know, it's like, depending on what your knowledge of some specific portion of pop culture might be, it might be like, this part of the show was for you, or this part of the show was for you, and the big reveal can or cannot mean anything, and it's almost indifferent.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, to be sure, in WandaVision, especially, with this big reveal. Is it supposed to be, like, shocking? Because to me, like, when they reveal what Agnes's real true identity is, they sing like this little song that's inspired by an old TV show called The Munsters.
Right.
Then they kind of go through like all the little things she's been doing to manipulate the show. And but if you listen like to the words, to me it was like, I think some of the words were like, you never saw it coming. And it almost came across to me like they were almost like making fun of, like, not making fun of, but like almost in on the joke, like saying, you never saw it coming, as if to say, this is no surprise to any of you.
Right. Yeah. Is it like being kind of like haha self-aware humor there? Or is that supposed to like, and again, that's what I'm saying, like, is there a chance that you weren't even supposed to figure out that Agnes is likely more than she appears?
Right. I think it brings up a cool question of, how does Marvel want you to watch their shows? Because I think you're right. Like, there's no doubt their intent is for them to say Agatha Harkness, and then for you to like pull out your phone and say, who's Agatha Harkness? And like go deep diving down in there, because it really isn't a surprise. Like, if you've done much deep diving at all, like, there have been hints everywhere, specifically that it's this character.
Yeah.
Like, down to, I think her license plate in one episode was like the hex code for the color dress she always has on in the comics or something.
Oh, wow.
You know, which, like, oh, get it? Hex code, color purple. Like, she's been in purple. She's dressed like a witch. She, you know, whatever. She's been wearing that witch brooch the whole time.
Right. Yeah. It's like anything. Details are so interesting. And I think one thing that I personally love is when there was a twist and then you go back and watch it again and you realize how much groundwork was laid the entire time for that reveal. And I think those types of details end up being remarkably interesting to me after the fact, where it's like, oh, I had no idea. Oh my gosh, look at that. And it was right there. Oh, it's like staring you in the face. You know, like, those are the best stories.
Yeah.
Is where every single detail necessary for that reveal has existed the whole time.
Right.
And it's like, it's a question of whether or not you noticed it. And then almost even getting the added enjoyment of, then every time you watch it again, you get that additional like, oh, I didn't even notice that.
Well, it's
the last time.
What's interesting about this one, though, is that, like, I'm not sure, you know, if you're just watching the show cold and you've never experienced like the comics or anything and you're not looking it up online, there's no, like, it's not impossible to know that Agnes was the villain. Like, she's been suspicious or whatever throughout the whole show. But to know that she is a character called Agatha Harkness, that's impossible. Like, you could never have landed on that. That's not already in the show somewhere.
Sure.
You know what I mean? She's a bad character who is a witch. You could probably have gotten that far on your own. But if you're, but to that end, it's like, I think Marvel does want you to be able to go back and, like, I think they want you researching it, and they're almost counting on you to do it as part of your enjoyment for the show. And because, like, especially WandaVision, like, it does require, it shouldn't be the first TV show you ever watch, you know? Like, it requires you to understand a little bit of the history of sitcoms.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a little, like, or else it's just going to be completely over your head. You're going to be like, why does it start out black and white? And what, you know?
Sure. Well, and it's not really the first time, too, if you look at the Avengers movies in general, that there was a little bit of, like, homework that needed to be done in order to get the full appreciation for what you're watching. Like, you know, if you saw Endgame and it was the first ever movie you saw, then, you know, Cap being able to pull the hammer through the air probably doesn't hit nearly as hard as it needs to based on what you would know about that hammer's history and what it means and everything that goes with it.
Right.
You know, you might just be like, oh, yeah, okay, so he can use the hammer.
Even that, though, it's like, I feel like when the people are writing it, they are trying to take into consideration, this might be the first time you're watching it. Because, like, even earlier in Endgame, Thor summons the hammer and says, I'm still worthy. Like,
sure.
He's like, you don't get the full background. And if that's your first one, you probably didn't gather that you have to be worthy to pick the hammer. But something is there.
There is something,
like,
there.
They
you're
set
right.
it up. They're like, okay, just in case you forgot, maybe you haven't seen an Avengers movie since Age of Ultron came out 5 years ago. Let us remind you how Thor's hammer works.
Right.
Like, we need to include one line that says, you need to be worthy to hold this.
Right.
Because there's a payoff coming.
There's a payoff.
And
yeah.
Certainly 90% of the population, you're not getting to Endgame without having seen any other Avengers movie. But some people might maybe didn't see it because, you know, Mjolnir wasn't in Infinity War.
Right.
At all. You know, they just go and build the other hammer. But
axe.
So what?
Axe.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
Stormbreaker?
Yeah.
It's an axe.
I guess so. It has both sides. Right?
Has both
you could
sides.
Hit people with the flat side.
Sure.
Like a hammer if you wanted.
Okay. Okay.
But it seems possible to me that there's plenty of people who only saw the Avengers movies rather than, like, every single thing in
every
between.
Installment. Yep.
So maybe the last time you saw Mjolnir was in Age of Ultron 6 years ago or whatever.
Right.
And you needed a quick reminder. And that's where I wonder, like, if you just jumped into this show, like, you don't necessarily need to know what all of Wanda's powers are. You just see her do stuff, you're like, okay, I get it. She has powers.
Right,
and you see
right,
Vision
right.
run around. It's like, if you don't know that he's, like, built from the Mind Stone and that's, like, one of the most important, you know, cosmic things in the universe, like, that doesn't really affect whether or not you want, it's like, okay, he has powers too. He can
right.
like reach through things and he can run fast and he can fly and whatever, you know?
Right. Right.
He has
right.
or got a robot body.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So, like, moving beyond that though, like, I think the other thing about WandaVision that feels self-aware, it feels like it's shining a light a little bit on us, us being like the grand us of people of the internet who dissect movies, shows, mm-hmm. stuff like this, details, is they literally have in one of the episodes, in episode 3 or 4, the like whiteboard with all of the exact same questions.
Right. That everyone watching has.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it becomes this like remarkably like self-aware show in that way, especially as it pertains to like there's so much mystery surrounding it. Like, I feel like if you really have any hope of understanding with like what's going on, you're doing some looking.
Right.
You know, you're digging into some details, you're asking questions, you're saying like, well, what does that mean? And what was the significance? And why did that happen? And who is this character?
Yeah.
And that's like, it's interesting to me that they have those questions on there and that through writing and shooting the show, they were smart enough to realize what questions us at home were going to be asking.
That is the real thing as well, because it's not as if they're like shooting the show week to week and like getting feedback and understanding how it's going to go down.
Right.
Like,
exactly. Yeah. Right.
Every episode is done a year before, you know, it was released on Disney Plus.
Right.
And they're getting these things and they're predicting, they're controlling how you think about it so much. to the point where they're like literally putting like, here's what you're probably thinking on screen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Right. And but that acknowledgement is almost gratifying a little bit too, where it's like, us on the show, we also don't know the answers to these questions.
Well, the characters of the show don't, but obviously the people making the show. No, but then it, you know, well, if you're us, you're like, okay, if they want us to think this way, so as if we're not thinking that way.
We're not,
If they put that question on the board, it's because the answer isn't going to, you know, what does that mean? You know, where are they trying to get, they want you to look over there at that magic trick. But right. Actually, this hand is over here and you're like, yeah, what does the hex mean? What does the hex mean? Meanwhile, the answer is like floating like right here off screen. And you're like, oh, I was kept trying to figure out the hex. I don't know.
Even had that like close up magic.
Yeah,
like Jimmy Woo.
Exactly.
This is the sleight of hand.
This is the problem. See, like, as people are watching this, the next episode will have come out probably like hours beforehand. So maybe this has been resolved. But I'll just say, like, when they revealed Act of the Harkness, it's like, oh, she's been the villain all along. And it's like, well, I don't know. I think they're saying that, but I feel like she's still answering to someone a little bigger somewhere. Like, there's something else happening. So you're like, oh, it was Agnes the whole time. Okay. No need to worry about who the villain is anymore. And it's like, well, maybe there is.
Could we still wonder?
I think there's still someone else out there. I don't know who's going to, there's possibilities.
Yeah. So anyway, it's been a lot of fun, but I also think that what I'm so happy and excited for is that basically Marvel decided to do something just exceptionally weird.
This is what I think has been spectacular about WandaVision and what makes it like this true, like diamond, not even like diamond in the rough, but like, okay. We talked a little bit earlier about like superhero burnout.
Yeah.
It was like 23 movies over the course of 10 years. That means like 2 to 3 movies a year.
Yep.
Coming out for the MCU. Mixed in there was also all the shows that came out on Netflix. Mixed in there was like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that was coming out on ABC for a while.
Yep.
Like, the MCU has been, and like when Iron Man first started, like Iron Man, the first movie in the MCU, when that first came out, it was like, oh my gosh, someone finally figured out superhero movies.
It's true.
You know, like yep. We had the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies there for a while, and it was like, these are awesome. Everyone likes these. Spider-Man 3 sort of tanked, but then like Iron Man came out, and it seemed like, oh my gosh, we're actually getting good superhero movies that are fun and like sort of like the comics. And they figured it out. But 10 years later, there was definitely this sense of like, okay, we get it. Like, we've seen so many, like, every time we go to the movies, it's to see another superhero movie and they just punch each other and the good guy wins. Like, I get it. Okay. Like, ugh. So it's interesting to me that like we got to Endgame and it was this amazing finale, but there was the sense of like superhero burnout where
it was like, do we need more?
Yeah. Like, how can we keep making this interesting? And I know, like my wife particularly, she's, you know, not big in, like, she likes, you know, she'll go to the superhero movies or whatever with me, but where they're fighting and doing all the action, she just, like, tunes out.
Sure.
And all that. So, what has been amazing to me about WandaVision is that WandaVision is, like, the first thing that has come out in over a year to the MCU.
Yep.
Because after Far From Home came out, nothing came out at all. Like, they were slated to have Black Widow come out, to have the Eternals come out.
Yep.
And even on Disney Plus, Falcon and the Winter Soldier was supposed to come out before WandaVision.
Right.
So WandaVision was like fourth in line to the throne to be the first thing seen in the MCU as part of Phase 4. And somehow everyone else ahead of it died. Like, because of like it is the first thing now, which is weird because all of 2020, nothing. And I feel like in a weird way, because WandaVision is so unique and so not like any other superhero movie at all, that WandaVision has somehow like cured superhero burnout.
Yes.
You know, like we took a year off because of COVID, which maybe helped everyone be like, forget a little about it.
Like it was, kind of like, not only did you get distracted with some other shiny new toy that was kind of like, hey, how about instead of superheroes, we do this other thing instead, and everybody's like, okay, I'm gonna put my attention over there now. It was like everything paused.
Yeah.
And what came out of it, was WandaVision. And immediately, and I'm right there. It's literally part of what we do. Like, it is good for our business for superhero movies to continue to be remarkably popular.
Yeah.
And that being said, I was discouraged.
Like, from going to see more superhero movies?
Not from going, like, I knew that, especially with what we do, like I said, we would go.
Yeah.
But I think that there was a part of me that's like, I don't know what else they could throw at me that would still feel interesting.
Right.
Like what are the stakes going to be? Or how do you make it compelling? Or like, in what way do you sort of like rewire the way that you tell a superhero story that it's kind of like, this is different. This is fun.
Yeah.
And it's somehow, some way, sitcoms through the decades has been the answer.
Well, because it's been like, it's about two superheroes, but in the least superhero way, like I've ever seen a superhero anything.
Right.
You know, it's like, yes, we're back in the MCU. We all missed it for over a year and we came back and we're like, oh, it's back. And it looks completely different,
but
even better somehow.
Yeah.
You're like, and I don't know. Cause I think if you'd just gone straight from Far From Home later that year, you'd walked right into Black Widow. It would have, I have no idea. Maybe Black Widow is going to be amazing.
I have a feeling it is going to be amazing.
I think it's
going
to be really good. But by all accounts, just looking at the trailers, it looks very similar. It looks like very standard Marvel fare. Like, it's probably going to be a bit more of like a spy movie, I'm going to guess.
Sure.
Just based on, Black Widow's powers or lack their skill set.
Yeah.
That's what we'll say.
There you go. That's perfect.
Yeah. But by the time you got to WandaVision, if you had already seen all the other things that were supposed to come out, I think WandaVision would have felt like it was like very... like one of these things is not like the other, but the fact that it came out first is really setting up just like, it's like they're allowed to experiment with more stuff. Like, whereas if it had come out later and you just like continued down the line of like beat 'em up, this is how Marvel movies go, then when you saw that one, it would have felt very experimental.
Yeah.
And you'd been like, not for me. But now that it's been a full year and you're walking right into WandaVision and you're like, this is all, and because it's so popular, it feels like there's this like license now, like you can try lots of stuff.
Yes.
Who's to say? Who knows?
It's funny too, because it proves a little bit of just like how human even the people making these movies are a little bit too. But like a lot of people said that, Thor Ragnarok never happens without Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
James Gunn comes in, does this really wacky, weird, 80s music.
Yeah.
Comedy, effectively.
Right, yeah. Space dramedy.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. Right. And then because of that, you get Taika Waititi, who's able to then go and do Thor Ragnarok and just make it flat out ridiculous.
Right.
But it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's got, Jeff Goldblum.
So, there you go. Bravo, WandaVision.
Bravo, WandaVision.
Curing superhero burnout.
That's my hope.
That's my hope.
I think the real test is going to be, how does Falcon and the Winter Soldier? Because I would say that in the same way that Black Widow does look like your typical, Winter Soldier style movie, black SUVs that get exploded and people fighting in streets and stuff, jumping out of airplanes. That's exactly what Falcon and the Winter Soldier looks like.
It looks like exactly standard fare. Good guys beating up bad guys, explosions, punches. Yeah. It looks like that's exactly what I'm expecting from that show.
Yes.
I think what's going to be curious though is that because like, if there was an intended watch order, like people argue about this about Star Wars all the time. Like, what order should I watch them in?
Right.
And people like, my answer to this day, if you're wondering now, like it's switched around, but release order at this point for Star Wars.
That's fine.
So the question is like with Marvel, did they have an intended watch order? Like would things in WandaVision have made more or less sense if you had seen Black Widow, or if you'd seen Falcon and the Winter Soldier? Or now that you've seen WandaVision, will things in like, I don't know, like does the, or like, I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Like what it, if you had seen those things first, surely certain elements of WandaVision would have made a little bit more sense because you would know something about the sentiment pre-established by those things.
Like, I have no idea, but imagine Falcon and the Winter Soldier ends and in the post-credit scene, everyone gets hit with a red wall of energy and you're like, what was that?
Right.
Then as you're watching WandaVision, you know that like, oh yeah, that hex is getting big.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
And who's to say, I have no idea if that'll happen, Falcon, but you'd have left that season wondering like, what was that? What was that red wall?
Right.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Interesting red wall.
But as soon as WandaVision started, you'd be like, I know exactly where this is going.
Right.
That it's going to grow huge. So who's to say?
I have
no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let me tangent slightly away from MCU, but still Marvel.
Okay.
Okay, so I have something that we've talked about this a lot here lately, where I'm trying to like reduce the amount of noise that I have in my life by way of like objects and things.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, obviously like One Cup Life. Fred the Cup.
Right.
Right there.
Available now at patreon.com/popcornculture.
That's the one.
If you sign up for a annual quarterly exclusive item.
Yeah.
Team Jazzy or J.
Or Buzzy or B.
Jazzy or J.
Yeah. No. Okay. Anyway, so at my house, I have been going through and I've been doing tons of clean out. It's almost like I'm like getting ready to move, where I've got piles of like throw this stuff away, donate this stuff to like, you know, Goodwill, sell these objects, keep these objects, or like, you know, whatever the case may be. And as I've been going through and doing this project and culling my possessions, I stumbled across these. They are Captain America shield, like barbell plates. They're like so for like weightlifting.
Right. So like the plates you put on the side of the bar. If you're going to bench press, you put weights on the side.
Yep.
Those weights are these big 45-pound plates. Those look like Captain America shields.
They look like Captain America shields. Yep.
Sounds so awesome.
They are incredibly cool.
Right.
And I remember seeing them pop up like several years ago and being like, what? No way. Like, that's amazingly cool. I love that someone thought to do that. And I like hemmed and hawed and like stepped on like one foot, then the other. Like, I could not decide as like whether or not to purchase them for the longest time. And then I think that I got like a gift card or something happened. And I was finally like, okay, I'm going to buy them.
I'm going to do it.
And like all home gym equipment, basically it arrived and I thought that it was incredibly cool and used it a handful of times and then promptly put it in the corner of my basement and pretty much never touched them again.
Oh, classic story.
Classic story.
Classic story. Yeah.
So anyway, as I'm going through and I'm like, you know, moving everything around, I'm like, actually I have a container that I keep, like our dog food in. It's like a food grade trash can.
Okay.
And it sits on top of the plates in my basement. And I went to like empty my dog food the other day and I like picked it up and I was like, oh yeah, the plates. I was like, I bet I can sell these. Cause like it's actually one of those items that happen to, become rather scarce as a result of quarantine is all weightlifting equipment, because pretty much all gyms shut down and then promptly everyone bought all available
home gym stuff. Right. And weights are even pre-quarantine. Were a kind of a unique item in that, based on their functionality, they just never lose value.
Right.
It's like, the point of this is that it weighs 45 pounds. And even if you've used it extensively and dropped it and it's got scratches, the fact is it still weighs 45 pounds and will, like, that's the whole point of it.
It will still serve your purpose as well as it did the day that you bought it.
They lose zero value over time because the point of them is to be heavy and that's all they do.
That's all they do. Yeah. Yep. So anyway, so I've got these plates and I'm sort of like, I'm scouring around and I like list things on like Facebook Marketplace and, you know, whatever, just to find a way to effectively like yard sale them online.
Okay.
And so I'm like pulling up the marketplace, like listing thing to list these. And I'm like, I don't even know what a fair price is for them. Like I just kind of want to like move them so that I can, you know, get them out of my house. And, you know, because basically the big thing for me was like, if I'm not using it, then I don't need it is like the rule. And so even though I really like them and think they're really cool.
Right.
It's kind of like, I don't need these. And so that's
you're going very like Marie Kondo over there.
A little bit.
Like, does this spark joy for me right now? Like I acknowledge it did spark me joy, but at the moment I don't need it.
I'm not going
to use it.
And I have other heavy things.
Right.
So I'm well like covered in that category. So I'm like, okay. Let me try to like find some prices. So I can't find anybody else who's selling them on Facebook Marketplace. And I'm like, well, that's not that odd. They're like sort of, they're unusual anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're these like Captain America plates. And so then I like hop on over to eBay and I just like punch it in. I'm like, let's see if anybody's just selling them on here. Sure enough, they are. And they're selling like a single two pair of like just like two plates, two 45 pound plates.
Okay.
Is listed for like $3,000.
$3,000. How much did you buy them for?
I bought the whole set for like $550.
Okay, so you have got like discovered rare weightlifting materials?
Apparently.
That is amazing.
Amazing. Right. And so I think what's happened, and this is me speaking purely off the cuffs here, is that they were sort of these like rather specialty pieces of equipment. And the company that sells them is a brand called Onnit, O-N-N-I-T. And they've done like lots of cool
stuff. And they're
on
it.
They are on it.
Right.
They've done lots of cool stuff. Like we actually have here in our office, like Star Wars kettlebells where like they're one shaped like Boba Fett, one shaped like a stormtrooper, and one shaped like Darth Vader. I think for our younger brother for Christmas one year, I gave him like an Iron Man kettlebell. Mm-hmm. They've got like the Han Solo and Carbonite yoga mat.
Right. So they got like pop culture, novelty, weightlifting stuff.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think what happened was is like with quarantine, everything shutting down, you know, like factories probably going like a bit more into overload, trying to like make stuff. And my guess is that they just were like, we don't need to make novelty anything. Like that's taking too much time, energy, work, whatever. Make efficient, basic plates. You
right.
know, like, you know, if people need plates, let's not put our energy into making these cool themed sparkly ones. Let's just make plates.
Right.
Because that's
people need them.
That's what people need.
Right.
Health is important. And so I think what happened is, I mean, they're just not available for purchase anymore. And so now sort of rather unexpectedly, it's like I've got these like rare trading cards that weigh, you know, 210 pounds collectively.
Oh man.
And so like, I don't know what to do with it because there's also this like weird thing that happens with all collectibles, which is that like, if you go online and you're like, I have that Beanie Baby bear collection, I'm going to go see how much the Princess Diana bear sells for these days on eBay.
Right.
I guarantee someone's listed it for $12,000.
Oh, like, right, right. Like this has just been sitting in my closet for 20 years. I don't know if it's actually worth this much, but if I list it here, it's not hurting me. And if someone buys it, I just made $20,000.
Right. Or even if you're just like in the collector's game in general, it probably doesn't hurt you to list a bunch of things in that category that right. are known to have a little bit of value, to just be like, yeah, list them for like 12 grand. Nobody ever buys them, but you want to know what it does? It raises the value of everything else.
Right, right, right. Like, oh, maybe you list it once at 20,000 and people are like, oh my gosh, is that what it's worth? And then you see it listed for like 1,000 and you're like, well, this is a screaming deal.
Exactly. When like in reality, maybe it's worth like $18.
Right.
You know, and then you're like, yeah, so you go for it. So anyway, I mean, I could very well just be in that position. And that's
right. Someone's just inflating the value of their plates to 3,000.
Right. Like okay. someone's got them. Mm. And I collect, well, collect's the wrong word because I wear them. I like rare sneakers.
Okay.
So I like will try to track down certain ones, and I have paid premium prices for a small handful of like the sneakers that I've purchased before, actually including my current Mickey Mouse Vans that I'm wearing today, but with the full knowledge that like I probably paid twice as much as what they would have cost if I had just bought them the day they were available in the store.
Boy, not as easy as you'd think though, because we've tried to buy like one-off specialty Vans before. Or yeah. I think when Toy Story came out, they had a bunch of new shoes that dropped and we were ready on the day and we still missed some.
We did.
Yeah.
We sure did. Yeah, absolutely. But we still got some other ones.
We did get it. We got some. We got some.
Yeah.
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 Got some pretty great Buzz Lightyear shoes.
So anyway, I was going through, I was like tormented last night though. So I was going to list my first pair of plates on eBay. And I'm like, well, now I have no idea. Like, and now that I've seen that like 3,000 number in my head, I'm like, well, I wouldn't let them go for less than 750. You know? But like in my head before, I would have been perfectly happy to get like $300 for my entire set, being like, you know what? I got some enjoyment out of these. I'm happy to pass them on to something else. But now it's immediately like I'm like an aficionado.
And right.
It's like, oh yeah, I've got these rare plates that I was previously keeping underneath my dog food.
That's right. Enjoy.
Enjoy. Yeah. So and now I don't know, it's so interesting for me. So I listed them on eBay last night. I think I started the bid at like $325 for just two of my plates. So instead of the whole set.
Whole
so,
set.
Yeah. And I got offers overnight on them. Like immediately. I know. As this episode goes up, they're actually still available on eBay. So
maybe, I see what
maybe,
you're doing.
Maybe. So if you want to go and like, you want to go and check them out, you know, see how many people are like watching. But I'm so excited to like watch this unfold because I'm like, is this one of those moments where I've like somehow found something that I bought that ended up being rare?
And everyone, like, everyone dreams of this.
I know. It's that the
like
dream.
I know. Oh man. It does feel like you're getting to like live out a dream where like everyone secretly hopes that some long lost toy in their basement is actually somehow through the decades has remained in mint condition, and turns out it was super rare. And it turns out someone's going to pay big money for it.
Exactly.
Like, this is, and so it's very interesting that you have stumbled into this, like, short-term turnaround on a collectible weightlifting item.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
But this is so weird about weightlifting stuff, too, is that, because almost everything about it is just be heavy,
yep,
that all of the function is still there.
Yeah.
So they're used, but that almost doesn't matter. Because, like, I can't imagine people buying weightlifting plates solely for the collectability of it.
I would be surprised if that was the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be super surprised. And that's, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, like, they are themed for sure, but otherwise they are also just like professional grade plates.
Right.
So yeah, they're extreme high quality. Mm,
interesting.
I know.
Well,
I know.
I'm very curious to know how this unfolds for you.
I am too.
Yeah.
I am too. Yeah. I'll be sure to include updates as we go. And this evening, my game plan is to list my 25 pound pair and my 45 pound pair. So,
who knows what's going to happen?
Sky is the limit.
Gates are open. Gates are open. Ben, okay, this is not related to Marvel. It's just related to Facebook.
Okay.
But let me tell you a complaint. Can I register a complaint with you about Facebook?
Oh, most certainly. I'll call all my friends over there and be
yeah,
hello, friends at Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay. My brother has words.
Yeah. I don't really use Facebook almost at all anymore.
Sure.
You know, I did buy my mountain bike off there through the marketplace, which was very handy.
Nice.
And I, you know, had to go drive, meet a guy in a parking lot and get a bike, and it was great.
Yeah.
Used it a lot. That's been good functionality. But what I really, and I don't mind like having a Facebook page and stuff, because sometimes it's nice to be able to go like check like, oh, what's this person up to? Whatever.
Right.
But I don't remember the last time I've posted something like publicly to my profile or even changed my picture.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have had more children and I have still not changed my profile picture.
Okay.
You know, that's where I'm at with Facebook. Mostly I use it to log into the Super Carlin Brothers page.
Kind of a soft flex there.
Yeah. And like,
I don't overshare my children pics.
I mean, if you go to like my Instagram or something, I certainly put pictures on there. Follow me on Instagram. But mostly it's just like, I feel like I need to have a Facebook for like what we do, and to be able to access like the Super Carlin Brothers page and stuff like that.
Sure.
But in the meantime, something I've wanted to do is just like clean up my Facebook profile a little. Like, maybe I don't love, as a 33-year-old person, these albums I have posted from like Beach Week or something.
Yes.
You know, like when I was in high school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I just want to get rid of these. I want to take this down. However, just because I don't want those pictures posted like publicly attached to my profile doesn't mean I don't want to still have access to the pictures.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But what's happened is that since I first got a Facebook account, I've had, you know, several laptops and or computers. Not that, you know, every picture I've ever had has not made its way from one to the next.
Okay.
In a way.
Yep.
So I will have like pictures from albums like 10 years ago that I still want to at least have the option to revisit.
Okay.
Should I want to, without them existing on my profile page. What is a man to do? How would you go about solving this problem?
Okay. Can you not just like privatize an entire album? Is that not just like
I don't know if you can just like hit private on an entire album. That might be one way. What I want to do is to be able to click download album and then delete the album.
Okay. That makes the most sense.
Yeah,
would be to download the album and then be able to just like remove everything from there.
Yes.
But I suppose if you're Facebook, that is like not what they would hope you would do with that.
Well, this is exactly what I think is happening, is that like, this is such an obvious feature to be able to just be like, yes, I would like to download, like, you can download individual pictures from your Facebook page. Like, you can go through and download, want this one.
Got it.
For whatever purpose. But there is no point, there's no functionality inside of Facebook right now which allows you to just download your entire album at
your
once.
Your photos.
Yeah, photos. And then just like you can delete an album, no problem. Like, that option's there, but download full album, not there. And it's like, if I wanted to do this, I would have to go through every single picture and download them one at a time. And it is so frustrating, because I have looked this up. I was like, I must be crazy. Like, I've been on Facebook forever. Certainly I can figure this out. Like, I must just be missing the button. And like, part of me had this like moment of pride where I was like, I'm not going to look up how to download an album. This has got to be so obvious.
Right, right.
I bet, like, after struggling with that for like a year, I was like, I'm just going to look it up. I'm like, can I download an album? Why can't I figure it out? And it's just like, no, it was a feature at one point, but it has been removed. Like, they have removed. So to me, the only reason Facebook would take this off is because they're holding your pictures hostage.
Hostage. Like, it's like, this is where they get to live.
They know. Yeah. They're like, if people can just take all their photos down, like, they will, and then they'll delete their account. Like, but if they can't, they will keep their account open solely so they can continue to have access to the photos. I think that is exactly what is happening, and I am so mad that it is exactly working on me, because I just want to get rid of them. I want to have like a much more nicely curated Facebook page.
I understand that completely, because I know that there are, especially from like my early college years, just some embarrassing photos.
Right.
You know, just some not so great looks.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I've thought about this before too. Like, as I was going through college, I feel like I was so drastically underestimating just how abundantly obvious what I was up to, like how visible it just plainly was to every member of our extended family who was friends with us, who was friends with me on Facebook, being like, yep, we know exactly what he's up to.
Look at Ben going to all these parties.
Not really
what
parties.
What a social being.
Not really parties.
No?
No, yeah. I wasn't invited to very many parties, actually.
That doesn't sound right.
It's true. It's true. That's why I would like to throw parties. It's the easiest way to avoid not being invited to parties is to have your own.
I feel like that is like a preemptive strike, because I don't feel like you would have had trouble finding parties to go to.
Maybe. But I don't know. But I didn't. It's the honest truth. It was like not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I actually think your point that you bring up is extremely interesting, because I think that throughout the years, I remember I got my first digital camera when I was in seventh grade. And it was a Minolta, 2.3 megapixels.
Wow.
Not
2.3.
I know. Yeah, it had a 2-inch screen on the back. It was amazing.
Impressive.
I know. I guess what's really interesting to me about this is that once digital cameras kind of became like the norm, and then obviously now it's not even digital cameras, everybody just has their phone.
Right.
Is my photos are not stored like anywhere. So you're exactly right. Like, every single time I've like gone from the desktop PC that I bought as a high school student to my laptop that they gave me in high school, which had photos on it, to my first college laptop, which just eventually I think disintegrated and is now a pile of
just smoldering ash somewhere.
Smoldering ash, quite literally. To, you know, like my first iMac, my fourth iMac. Like, you know, I have put and stored pictures on each of these computers respectively throughout the years, and then been terrible about removing them and putting them in some central place in every single interim. So I have just like lost
tons of photos,
15 years worth of photos.
But yeah, because like nowadays, almost anything you take a picture of is like, oh yeah, it just saved to your iTunes account. It goes into the cloud.
Sure.
Whatever.
Sure.
And you buy a new phone, you turn it on, you plug in your account information, boom, all the photos you took are still right there.
Still right there, which is amazing. And it's very nice, because it means that, you know, I can scroll back and relive things and, you know, just like kind of have those like fun memories. But I've thought about this because our dad growing up was fantastic about having yearly photo albums where he would go and he would have photos printed, and, you know, they're like neatly labeled and they're still in the basement to this day, where you can see like 1990, 1991. 1992. And, you know, you just have the full year's worth of photos all lined up, and they're all always there.
Right.
You know, and it's like my high school photos that I had taken, you know, thousands of photos across like multiple digital cameras and my first cell phones and stuff, they're just gone.
Just gone.
Like, I will never see them again.
Right.
And that is like devastating to me. It's like, there's all these things that I'll just like, I'll never be able to like show anyone.
Well, you just have to tell them about it here on the pop, Ben, I guess.
I guess so. I'll have to work my brain real hard to do me a remembery.
Paint people some word pictures.
Some word pictures. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I am excited about that. I feel like because we're doing the pop, there's a part of me that's like, 20 years from now, I'm going to be able to like come back and like listen to what I was thinking.
Yeah. When here I was, like, are 30. Like WandaVision hot takes.
Exactly. Like, remember when that was a thing?
Remember when WandaVision was changing the scene of the MCU?
Right. And now there's an entire sitcom that's just like was inspired by WandaVision. It's right. already come and gone. Who knows? 12 seasons.
Wow.
Very impressive.
Impressive. What yeah. a run.
What a run. What a run. Actually, no. Okay. We're slightly long, but there's one last thing I want to touch on because it was just about exactly 1 year ago. And maybe we can cover this in next week's episode as well. We made predictions. I think on the March 7th episode of 2020,
okay.
where,
oh.
where we were like, what is life going to be like 1 year from now? And oh. I feel like what us on March 7th, 2020 did not realize is just how much the world was about to change.
Oh yeah. Cause that would have been, I mean, we would have known about, I think what we were calling coronavirus more
right.
commonly than besides COVID. We would have known about it, but I don't think we were in like full quarantine mode just yet. We were like, right almost
the,
there.
Right on the cusp.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for today, what do you think is going to be happening 1 year from now?
1 year from now, okay. I think we will either be hosting or have just said goodbye to one Seamus Gorman in office again.
What?
Yeah, there you go.
Love it. Love it. Great prediction. Yep. Great prediction alert. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good one because exactly 1 year ago, I think he was here.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is like the eve of him leaving or something.
Right.
Getting
yeah.
close.
Okay.
Or no, I think he was here. Maybe not leaving yet.
Hmm. Interesting.
We'll see.
Welcome back, Seamus. Welcome back. Hey, here's my big question is, I wonder, and I don't even know if we'd be able to like reveal it, but I wonder if by then we will be involved in any way, shape, or form in some type of production beyond Super Carlin Brothers, like being asked to help.
Oh, interesting.
Collab on something like a television series.
Guess we'll see.
I'd like to think.
That'd be exciting.
Five-year plan. Yeah, within 5 years. That could happen in 5 years.
I'm curious to see what we said last time.
Me too. Maybe I said the exact same thing.
Maybe.
Classic Ben. Anyway, guys, thank you so much, as always, for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. We super appreciate it. It has been so much fun getting to chat with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Lots of WandaVision talk.
I'm excited. I'm sure that as we speak right now, we will be discussing this week's episode.
I'm sure, because like we talked about WandaVision, and this is coming out on Friday, and as will the next episode, so... Maybe everything we said just aged really badly over the last hour.
That's a good point. So for feedback purposes, if you guys want to leave a comment on this video, if you'd like to leave a review on the podcast, if you have any other thoughts, you can bring them to our Reddit page, which is just Popcorn Culture.
Yep, r/popcornculture.
r/popcornculture. Or you can email us your thoughts to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. And finally, if you'd like to support us over on Patreon, we have a couple of different available tiers there. That help us determine who the one true host is every single week.
Indeed.
So you can check that out at patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next week,
pop pop.